Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT-TV. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our Wellness Wednesday conversation. This is Sickle Cell Awareness Month, and we are taking a detailed look at this disease, what it is, how it's treated, and how those who have it live with it. My guests are Dr. James Taylor VI, Director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital, and Ashanti Jean-Claude, sophomore biology major at Howard University. She has sickle cell disease. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at H Fisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Before the break, Ashanti, you wanted to share some information about that last phone call.
Yes. I'm hoping our previous caller, Miss Patricia, is still listening, because this was in response to the limits that she should be setting, you know, for her daughter. That was a difficult thing for me from what I remember when I was little, was following those rules that it seemed like nobody else had to follow. I remember getting upset with my mom, and I hate that I got upset.
How did that work out for you?
I know. Not too well. But for one, I love hot tubs. I would like to say that I love hot tubs. They help me. They make me feel better for some odd reason. It's the heat, I think, that kind of just relaxes my muscles, which is very much needed. And when it comes to getting in the pool, as Dr. Taylor said, it's definitely very important to keep in touch with your child's doctors and make sure to take their advice. But it's also, I think, important for her to learn her own body, because no one's going to know your body like you do, and no one's going to advocate for your body and your health like you do. So having a balance, I think, is very important when it comes to that.
Thank you so much. I hope that Ms. Patricia is hearing that. I think that's some really, really good advice. I want to go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Angela calling from Southeast D.C. Angela, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold.
Sure thing.
Thank you for having this discussion. As a big sister to a younger brother who grew up with sickle cell disease, I lived with the same wounds that Ashanti lived with. My brother couldn't do things, so I would volunteer not to do the same thing, so he wouldn't feel alone in the process. So Ashanti, thank you for sharing your story, and maybe that would help other families who struggle, you know, taking care of a child with sickle cell. I don't have sickle cell. My brother does, because my mother and his father both were affected. But my husband carries the trait, and our youngest child, we have three, our youngest child, our son, has the trait. And he has G6PD. And I really don't understand the G6PD. All I know is that he can't have flava beans, and I keep him away from sulfur. So I was hoping the doctor could give me more information about it, because when I Google it, it doesn't say much.
And it's G6PD. PD, okay.
It is a red cell enzyme. It has mutations in it. It's on the X chromosome. And like sickle cell trait, if you have G6PD deficiency, meaning a mutation in the gene, you're protected against malaria, and that's why it arose. And it can cause, under the right conditions, we call this fancy word, oxidative stress. Things like fava beans will cause that. There's a few other things that can cause that. If that happens, the red cells become fragile and can break open, similar to sickle cells not surviving a long time. You become anemic and have all sorts of problems.
Angela, well, there you have it. Thank you so much. I hope we were able to give you some additional information. And thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Sheila, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Sheila. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have four kids. One child doesn't have the trait nor the disease. My oldest child and my youngest child both have the disease. My oldest child was diagnosed with the disease at the age of 4. When he was born, they told us he had the sickle cell trait. We didn't realize he had the actual disease until he was 4 years old and he suffered from pneumonia, and they couldn't figure out why he kept carrying a fever. And then and my ex-husband was in the military. Then one of the doctors did a sickle cell test on both of us and determined that each one of us had the trait, and my son has the disease. Now, he has fared good. He had a high hemoglobin count. We found that out through a medical research at the Medical College of Georgia, and that's why his fetal hemoglobin is high, so he had less incident of crisis. However, my last son, he don't fare that well. He just started, he's 14 years old. He just started doing really, really well about 6 years ago when he was prescribed hydroxyurea. Hydroxyurea has really, really changed the scope of his disease. He takes it once a day. I think it's 1,500 milligrams, and he has not had a crisis, nor has he had a acute chest syndrome. So I would advise all parents, although there's a mandate, get your child tested, even if your doctor does not mention it, because it can be life-saving. If we were not at the right place at the right time, anything could have happened to my younger son. So that's my advice to all parents that are dealing with sickle cell traits in their family. My husband, my ex-husband, nor I know how far back the trait goes, because neither one of our families, as we know, were directly affected, but it's definitely within the gene line.
Hmm. You were nodding your head, Ashanti. You were going to think you were saying something. You were nodding your head in response to what she was saying. Did you have some thoughts about what she was sharing?
I was mostly just listening and taking it all in, because I really hate that they had to experience that misdiagnosis at first, and it took so long. And it just reminded me I take hydroxyurea. And I know that it helps me a lot. I take the same dosage that she was describing, and I know that it helps me a lot. That's all I was thinking about.
Mm. My only comment would be that we live in an era of genomic medicine, and the way that we're doing newborn screening is by proteins. That can be affected by the amount of fetal hemoglobin you have, by transfusions, other factors. We should just be sequencing DNA. It's a very simple test, and you'd never miss any of these. And it's very unfortunate. Occasionally, they are missed, and I've seen a few, and they can be somewhat complex, and probably what happened in this case.
Sheila, thank you so much for your phone call. Before I take another phone call, first of all, you said
hydroxyurea.
What is that?
Hydroxyurea is a form of chemotherapy. It's a drug that's been around for many decades. And sometime in the 1970s, people realized that they were testing it in animals and they got high fetal hemoglobin. And one of the cancer researchers asked a hematologist, "Why is this happening?" And he said, "I don't know." And soon after that, there were sickle cell patients in a hospital getting this experimental drug, and it raised their fetal hemoglobin. Fetal hemoglobin is baby hemoglobin, and it blocks that sickling. So the red cells don't form the sickle shape. They are nice round discs.
And that was my next question, because I think Patricia mentioned fetal hemoglobin at 19. So what does that mean?
So that means that 19% of the hemoglobin is baby hemoglobin. That's a very good number. Actually, 20% is the number that I always quote to patients. That's our target. You get above 20% and many of your symptoms will melt away. Occasionally you'll have crises, but very, very infrequently.
Is that a naturally occurring thing?
So it can be naturally occurring if you have a mutation that causes you to have high fetal hemoglobin. And one of the things that's on the horizon is gene editing. And we know a gene that turns off fetal hemoglobin. And if we mutate that gene through gene editing, now the patient can have very high levels of fetal hemoglobin.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are having our Wellness Wednesday conversation. We are talking about sickle cell disease. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Cheryl, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Cheryl. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Though I have a long years history with this, I'm going to kind of keep it kind of short. My spouse, who's 59 at this point, I've always known him to have the sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm.
He retired in 2021, December. By February 2022, he started to have strokes. Went through a series of tests and trying to figure out why at Hopkins, and come to find out he has hemoglobin SC disease. Since February 2022, he's had five strokes, the most recent one in June 16th. He is now undergoing, once a month he does this, a red blood cell exchange, apheresis, where they take out the sickle blood and infuse him with the healthy blood cells. And he's been going through this for a year. Has he had a stroke since then? Yes, a very, very small one. I think my question is, what can I, and I've had this conversation with him, but what can he look forward to? Like, is this something that obviously hasn't stopped the stroke, but, you know, hasn't been heard of? And, you know, what do you think about it, the red blood cell exchange?
So I think you're on the right treatment for the right problem. Red blood cell exchange is something that we know that without that, the risk of an adult having another stroke after they've had a first one is 50% if you don't do those red blood cell exchanges. Now, certainly patients can have recurring events even with the red blood cell exchanges, but that is the best available therapy. And if you will, it's a temporary cure because it's taking out all the sickle cells and putting in transfused red cells that last for about a month.
Hmm. Okay.
So do the sickle, does it reproduce itself? Like you're saying, it's temporary. It's taking out.
So it's temporary because his bone marrow continues to make red cells, and we can, you know, usually you're left with 70% new blood cells and 30% of what you had, but over that month it's going to increase, and you want to keep it under about 30%.
So we're talking about a blood transfusion.
Yes.
Okay. I see.
Yes. Very, very lengthy process. He sits on the machine. He uses about 8 or 9 packs of healthy blood cells to transfuse out the old sickle cell.
Yep.
He's weakened after, but like I said, he did have a stroke or two since he's been on it. Mentally, he's been, you know, just his brain has been altered from these strokes. So, you know, I'm just, you know, at this point concerned about his quality of life and, you know, where does he kind of go from here? He's right now in a rehab facility undergoing, you know, trying to get a little stronger, rehabilitated, but nothing is really working. So I just, you know, just wanted to know about that.
Well, this is unfortunate, and this is the type of thing where he is probably old enough that he did not benefit from newborn screening.
Well,
we would have known this.
What? I have said this to his family, like, thank God this man is 58 years old. He's had his whole life. I've never seen him have an episode. So he's had his whole life to be kind of healthy and live it. But at this point, yes, it's affecting him.
Well,
thank you.
And hemoglobin SC is the rarer form of sickle cell disease. It's a little bit milder until you have a crisis or a stroke or something severe like that. And I've certainly seen this maybe a decade or more ago. There was a young man who was in Afghanistan serving in the army on a mountain at, I don't know, 7,000 feet, and he had a splenic infarct, which is where your spleen dies in your organs, and he had hemoglobin SC. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with him in Afghanistan, and they sent him to Germany, sent him back to the United States, and I was one of the people who saw him, and it was clear to me, but it's simply amazing that somebody who could get through basic training in the army, and then not only that, fight a battle up in the mountains. And, you know, that's not the place you want to have a sickle cell pain crisis. So it can get missed, but it's usually somebody who didn't benefit from newborn screening.
Cheryl, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And we certainly wish your husband the best of health.
Thank you. I appreciate that. God willing.
Thank you so much. I want to talk about quality of life with you, Ashanti, because you said you're from Indiana. You're a long way from home. You know, Indiana to Howard University, that's a long walk. There's no question about it. What kind of considerations did you and your family have before coming to Howard, and more broadly, just going to college? What were those conversations like?
So my family did want me to go to an in-state college.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go to an HBCU because Indiana doesn't have an HBCU, right, unfortunately. So I knew that I wanted that experience. And so my mom especially, she was like, okay, well, at least find somewhere where there's a sickle cell clinic nearby or something like that. So then we could connect with them beforehand and make sure to get all the information we need to get to them. And when I found Howard University, when I found out that they had a clinic right on campus, I was like, okay, I feel like this is going to be the place, because they have an established sickle cell community. They have an established Black community, and that's something that I wanted to be a part of. So I worked with my physicians back at home, because I am a patient at the Indiana Hemophilia and Thrombosis Clinic. And so they sent me information over about the sickle cell clinic, about the doctors there and the people that I need to reach out to if I need help. And they kind of helped me really get set up to come here.
Mm. So you're a sophomore. So you've been here essentially one full school year. You're starting that second school year. How has being away from home, the adulting, as it were, for your health? I mean, how has it been?
My first year was rough.
Really?
Yes. Oh my goodness, it was so rough. And it's not like I haven't been away from home before. That wasn't the rough part about it, because as I said, I've taken a gap year. So I was living in different countries for months at a time. My first time adulting really was mm-hmm. in Ireland. The only difference between that and coming here was I did not have my twin sister.
I see.
Yes, that was the biggest difference. She's an artist and an entrepreneur. She does not go to school, and her art is beautiful. So she's working on that back at home in Indiana. And I am here working on getting my biology degree. However, before I came here, the most time I had ever spent apart from her was 2 weeks, and I did not expect the shock to my system that I had experienced when I got here, just because we've always been into different things, and we've always been opposite, and she does not have sickle cell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when I came here and I experienced that shock, along with that came some mental health struggles, and along with that came stress and all of that, and I ended up having a crisis and an infection and a fever that sent me to the hospital my first semester here.
Mm-hmm.
And the stress definitely didn't help, because stress is a big thing. I need to make sure to keep my anxiety low and keep my stress low in order to not further complicate a crisis or trigger a crisis. And I was not doing a good job at taking care of myself because of that. And so I was in the hospital for about 6 days, and it really set me back academically, because before then I was doing fine. But after that hospitalization, it was rough. It was a struggle.
Yeah. And Howard University certainly is in Ireland. So.
Yeah, yeah, but
no Blarney Stones, shillelaghs, or you know anything.
What I'm very happy about mm-hmm. is being able to meet Dr. Taylor. Because if I was not hospitalized, I don't believe I would have met him as soon as I did.
Okay.
And he has been a big part in helping me come out of that situation. He recommended a psychiatrist for me, and he told me, okay, Ashanti, I know your academics are rough right now, okay? But here's what we got to do. You know, he set a whole plan. I was like, okay, I can follow these instructions. He said, day by day, person by person, phone call by phone call, you can do this, this, and this. He helped me with my appeal for my HU capstone, and I got it. Thank you. I got it back because my grades were not too good. They're fine now.
Okay. I was going to ask.
No, they're fine.
Do we need to call your mom?
Oh, she knows. I tell her everything. Right. She knows. But that is why I'm here today, because of the support system I was able to find here on campus and because of my family. I call my sister every week at least. Mostly on a daily basis, but I didn't want to say that out loud.
Yeah, well, and that's okay, you know, because you, in addition to the physiological, as you said, the mental health in providing support for any illness that we may have is really, really important. And as I said, you know, you're a long ways from home, and you have to find those support systems where you can. So feather in your cap, you know, Dr. Taylor, certainly for, yeah, and I know what you're going to say. I'm just doing my job.
I am doing my job, but I have great insight into the disease and the effect on families, and it just can't be appreciated enough how important family is. And I see different reactions in different patients. Some want to insulate their family from a crisis and won't talk to them when they're in a hospital. When you're in the hospital, no matter what disease it is, that's when you need your family the most, mm-hmm. and you need help. And she really hit it, the nail on the head. The stress, that is, she's relearning rules for life as an adult now and how to manage stress.
So here's my other question. Can you, for example, can you exercise now? And if so, how do you have to be careful how you exercise? What impact does this have on your social life? Well, you don't have a social life because you got to keep those grades up. So you're not allowed to go out. You need to stay in the books, of course.
Right.
But what is all of that like?
So I played sports before high school when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I played soccer. I played basketball, volleyball. All that. I was into things. I liked being active. And then in high school, things kind of just got worse. I don't know what it was, but I wasn't playing anything then. But I exercise on a regular basis now. I said on a regular basis. Wait a second. Let me correct myself. I try to exercise
on a regular basis. Yeah, we all are guilty. We're all guilty of that.
Right. Let me not lie on this.
Right. I was supposed to go to the gym this morning. Didn't make it.
Yes, but I do try to exercise on a regular basis because that is important in managing my condition. I have to be exercising. I can't just not do it. But at the same time, I can't overexert myself. So I have to make sure to drink a lot of water.
Okay.
A lot. If I'm in a lot of pain from doing too much, I do, you know, resort to ibuprofen to help, you know, with the inflammation and everything. Because I remember when I was playing those sports and I would be doing too much, my hands and my feet would swell up.
Okay.
Like crazy. And I couldn't like make a fist really because they would be so swollen. I'd be like, huh, that's weird. And I would look at my friends. I'd be like, hey, are your hands swollen yet? And they'd be like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you know how that happens? And they're like, nah, that's weird. I'm like, oh, my bad. So I would make sure to drink a lot of water, and I would make sure to not get too cold, because when you're sweating and you're outside or you're you know, somewhere where it's a lot of AC, like in the gym or something, that extreme temperature change can trigger something. So I have to make sure to bring my sweats with me, along with my shorts and my sports bra, whatever, because I have to make sure that I create an environment that is compatible with what I need.
I didn't mention this before, and I think this is a really important piece. How, outside of the hydroxyurea, for example, how is sickle cell treated?
So now we have four drugs. Hydroxyurea, let's just put this in perspective. That was approved by the FDA 85 years after the first description of sickle cell. So we're 85 years behind. And then it was another 22 years before the next drug was approved. That was L-glutamine, 2017. And then two more came in 2019. So we now have four drugs. And if you throw in the blood exchanges that we've discussed, that's now five treatments. It's really wonderful to have five different treatments available for patients, because now if somebody doesn't take their hydroxyurea for whatever reason, they don't like it, it gives them too much nausea, something like that, now I have alternatives. Mm-hmm. And we can try something until it works.
How is it taken? Is it an injection? Is it a pill, the hydroxyurea?
It's oral. Okay. It's a pill. I take like three of them once a day, which is like 1,500 milligrams. And I got to tell you, my fetal hemoglobin is high. It's like in the 20s, I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. It's a flex. Yeah, I got a lot of that.
Yeah. Are the treatments expensive?
Hydroxyurea is not terribly expensive. The three other drugs are expensive. And the curative therapies that are on the horizon, gene therapy and gene editing, are terribly expensive, on the order of $4 million.
So my gracious.
My biggest concern is, who's going to have access? I would love for everyone to, if they're willing, receive it.
Yeah. What, from your perspective, what is on the horizon for treatments, the possible cures, discussions about cures?
So there are three potentially curative therapies. One can be done today. It's called a bone marrow transplant, but you have to have a brother or sister from the same parents who's a match, and that's a less than 1 in 4. So it's kind of a, depends on how many brothers and sisters you have. The more you have, the more likely you are to have a match, but no guarantees. That comes at a price. We give you huge doses of chemotherapy before we give you these donor stem cells, and that could potentially kill you in a small percentage of patients, but certainly a risk. The other curative therapies, gene therapy is in front of the FDA right now. What we do there is take out your own stem cells, so you don't need a batch, and we take them to the lab and we infect them with a virus that has a normal hemoglobin gene. We grow that up and give you a bone marrow transplant with your own stem cells.
How effective might that be?
It could be highly effective, and the beauty is now you don't need a donor. Again, because we're giving those huge doses of chemotherapy, there's a chance you could die. And I think we need to know those numbers before we bring that to all patients so that they can make an informed decision.
I actually have a question about
yeah.
that, because a few years ago, I heard about this woman. She was in her early 20s and she had sickle cell, and they used CRISPR gene editing to... I don't believe she had a bone marrow transplant. I think
she did. So okay. What CRISPR is, the same thing, only instead you take the stem cells out and you treat it with CRISPR, and it targets that fetal hemoglobin turn off gene.
What is CRISPR?
CRISPR-Cas9 is a set of enzymes that are normally in bacteria, and they nick and chew up DNA. And we can use this as a tool to inactivate a gene. So if we inactivate a gene that turns off fetal hemoglobin, what happens? Fetal hemoglobin goes up. So we take the stem cells out, treat them, and then transplant them back into you. CRISPR is a few patients have been treated, a handful right now. Results look promising, but we'll see in a few years. I'd like to see hundreds of patients treated before we really start advertising to
cool.
patients. It's very cool, but again, expensive too, Ashanti. And how are we going to provide that to everyone who would like it?
Well, you know, I would say, Ashanti, after this hour's worth of conversation, you can graduate with your biology degree next week, because you know, I feel so much better educated right now. I mean, this is a far cry from dissecting frogs, let me tell you. I want to make sure we do give your mom a bit of a shout out, because I needed you to kind of briefly share that story in the next minute or so about what your mother did when you were a little girl to really bring awareness to this disease?
Yeah. Yeah. My mom definitely deserves a shout out. Shout out, Mom. I love you. She did not even know of sickle cell before I was born. And she took it and she ran when she found out that I had this disease and when she found out how serious it was. So she started a nonprofit organization called Secure Networks, Inc. That's spelled S-C-A-C-U-R-E, excuse me, Secure Networks. And they actually work with the Indiana Department of Health to do newborn screenings. Newborn screenings, but share those results with parents and make sure to coordinate between parents and physicians with the newborn screenings. And she participates in events for sickle cell awareness and all that. And she makes sure that I remain educated.
Mm-hmm. And healthy.
And healthy, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, because we have no medical professionals, no doctors, no nurses in my family. However, I was inspired by my disease and by my mom because she's such a helpful person to people in general. Mm-hmm. I was inspired to enter into that field, and that's what I want to do, to help people like me. So
your mom sounds wonderful. Just a quick reminder, the Move On event for Howard University's Sickle Cell Center will not be held on September 23rd. It's been postponed because of the weather. That's going to be on September 30th. And we will make sure that we post that information on our website on whur.com. And real quick, where can somebody look for resources online for help about sickle cell?
I think one of the best websites is the Centers for Disease Control. Has a variety of information. Also, I believe Emory University has a clearinghouse of information of many of the sickle cell clinics around the country. There is not one place to find them easily.
Okay. Dr. Taylor, Ashanti, thank you both for coming in. I really appreciate it. Good health to you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
And finally tonight, some quick thoughts about fighting sickle cell disease. A lot of people who look like me are impacted, and I remember those commercials from years ago. We still don't hear a lot about it, but that doesn't mean it's not an issue. There are all kinds of illness-related causes competing for our attention these days, so please do not forget about sickle cell. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, September 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.